Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous 2-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who saw Duncan from Blue in Crew. This week is Richard Herring. Hello! Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast. I saw Duncan from Blue in Crew. He only goes to places that rhyme with his name now. That's where it's become. I was on the train, he was in Crew Station. He calls it Rahalastapa, apparently, so I don't know if that's, that's going to catch on. It's been an exciting week. I still have 2 children, which is good, isn't it? You know, you think 3 weeks in... To like 2 and nearly 3 years in with the other one. I haven't lost one yet, so that is tempting fate. So there we go. My daughter, we were driving for Sunday lunch with my in-laws yesterday, and my daughter's wearing sunglasses. She found some sunglasses, she put them on, she was looking quite cute. She said to me, I'm wearing sunglasses so the cunt... she didn't say that. She didn't say that. I'm very tired. Just cut that, edit this out. So I don't look like that. I'm surprised she hasn't said cunt yet, to be honest. Man, she's heard it a lot. Her mum swears all the time. I don't swear in front of my daughter at all. Her mum's always effing and jeffing. She said, I'm wearing sunglasses so the sun can't see me. Oh, fucking idiot. I think she's on drugs. I think that, seriously. How insane is that? What else has been going on? I'm living in the countryside now, so I'm very concerned about my bins. That's become my main focus. I've always been concerned about the bins, but they don't give it yet. The bins come every week, but they collect certain bins in the countryside. In London, they came every week and just took everything away.
In the countryside, you've got to put out the recycling 1 week and then your rubbish the other week. And they give you tiny bins, and there's not enough room in the bins for 2 weeks rubbish and 2 weeks recycling. So I started sort of creeping around my village under the cloak of night, putting my recycling in other people's bins. I think if anyone in my village finds out about that, I'm going to be in... Do you think there'll be... I wait until the last day. Like, it's tonight, actually. I go home tonight, and then I've got, like, some extra rubbish. I'll go across the road, and if the person hasn't filled their bin up, I'll put the rubbish in there, right? They still won't like it, though, will they? If they ever find out in my village... Luckily, there's no real broadband, in so they'll... None of them will ever find out about, and they're all stupid Brexit fuckers. So, A lady came round this week selling poppies, which is a beautiful thing to do, and we wanted to help with that. And she made my wife sign this form so that you get tax relief on the poppies, which is a good thing as well. And then she said, "Oh, did you notice what pen you were signing with that?" And she'd made her sign this thing with a Leave pen, a Vote Leave pen. She said, "Like, lots of people don't like that when they find out I've done that." I mean, you're trying to be helpful. You've already won, all right? Don't rub it. Don't come around. Anyway, welcome to my village. I hope she's not listening. Probably is. Hello, thanks for supporting the British Legion. Anyway, my guest this week is probably best known for playing the seductive voice of a can of Apple Tango. That is why we're here. Well, ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Jan Ravens. Welcome, sit down. And you have to hold your own microphone as well. I didn't mention that detail
very
to you beforehand.
Hello. This is nice, isn't it?
It's lovely here, isn't it?
Yeah.
How are
I'm
you doing?
It. I'm doing great, thank you very much. Yes, I'm on tour at the moment and hither and thither. I'm here in this very theatre a week on Friday.
Good.
Okay.
For viewers at home, that was two weeks ago.
Yeah. But for all these lovely people here who are regular visitors to the Leicester Square Theatre...
You must come back.
Come along.
So tell us about being the voice of a can of Apple Tango.
Well, I was quite surprised when you mentioned that because I had completely forgotten about it because normally when people say you're famous for doing a sexy voice, it was the Caramel Bunny.
Yeah, I'm not that... Which, I wouldn't go that way.
That's too obvious.
Yeah.
Which is all like, relax a while, Mr. Squirrel. But the can of Apple Tango... I think used to say it was like one of those voices that was just sort of feel the condensation running down my sleek sides.
Pretty good.
Yeah. I used to get a lot of those. I used to do sort of like Eternity Calvin Klein. You know, when you just sort of do the whole thing on an exhale. Yeah. Eternity Calvin Klein.
It's good. How do you get into the character of being a can? Do you have to do research to be the can of... Do you look at... Because I imagine if you're doing an impression of someone, you watch some videos and stuff of it.
Yeah, when you're doing an impression, it involves a lot of research. Yeah. Or sometimes they just leap out at you.
Yeah.
But with
a can of Apple Tango, do you look at the can or do you watch videos of people drinking the can?
No, you just quite straightforwardly listen to what the, the advertising executive is telling you about the can of Apple Tango, which, you know, was a load of wank, obviously. And I don't know quite why Apple Tango was being marketed as a sort of sexy beast.
Yeah.
But, I guess... Can you still get Apple Tango?
Oh, I think so.
Can you?
I think so.
So it did last.
You didn't kill it off.
I didn't kill it off.
People are buying just to masturbate into it, I think, as a result. Why don't you speak to me like you did on the advert? So,
the
caramel bunny was like one of the... I mean, aside probably from Jessica Rabbit, the sexiest cartoon character...
I know, and I never quite understood why people found the rabbit sexy. It was actually. I do have to say that the Caramel Bunny, the voice was created by Miriam Margolyes.
Yeah, I thought that was going to.
And then she went off to LA to be a film star, and so I stepped in, and it was all It was. I don't know. I think it was that kind of. That West Country, I mean, why is that West Country accent thought of as sexy? I don't know. Relax.
Never worked for me,
Mr. Squirrel. No?
No.
Just wasn't doing it.
I wasn't.
No,
well,
you were onto harder stuff, I think, by that point, weren't you?
But I grew up in the West Country, so, you know, I had a bit of a West Country accent.
Oh, did you?
No one had sex with me, but they were also from the West Country, weren't they? So to them,
not sexy at all.
Everyone in the West Country is watching the Cadbury's Caramel thinking, what's sexy about that?
Yeah, not getting it. Not getting it. No.
That's good, yeah. But Miriam Margolyes could have phoned that. I mean, she could literally have phoned that in.
Well, she could literally have done it from an ISDN studio, yeah. couldn't she? So I don't know why she didn't. She was probably too busy on set. You know, all those.
She's got a big flatulence problem, hasn't she?
She has. It would have been, yes, relax a while.
So maybe that's. I mean, you'd think that would. Everyone would go, we're happy you've gone to LA. Please do in a studio there.
Yeah, she's quite a one, isn't she? She's done all her rude stories on Graham Norton, though, hasn't she? About giving people blowjobs in a Winnebago and that kind of thing.
I'll have to get her on. Sounds good. Right, I didn't know this about you, and I did briefly mention it to you backstage, but you were the first female president of the Cambridge Footlights.
I was.
And you also directed the Perrier Award-winning Cambridge Footlight, the first winner of the Perrier Awards with Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie and
Emma Thompson, Tony Slattery, yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was heady days, Richard. Yeah. You know, heady days. Yeah, I did direct that show, and I'd left Cambridge the year before, and they asked me to come back and direct the review. And it was, you know, Hugh and Stephen, who, you know, as you can imagine, had pretty strong ideas of the way they wanted the show to be. So, yes, I did direct it, and guess who designed it? And I'll give you a clue: property programmes on the telly. Anybody? Sorry?
Nick Knowles.
Nick Knowles. Well, I don't know. I was trying to think of someone inappropriate and I couldn't. The bloke
no,
from Homes Under
Nick
the Hammer.
No, it was not Nick Knowles. It was Kevin MacLeod, ladies and gentlemen. Kevin MacLeod who designed it, yeah. And yeah, he did theatre design for a bit.
Right.
And then he had an interior shop and then he did grand designs and that was that. Anyway, the cellar tapes it was called. Do you see? The cellar tapes. And it was like set in a cellar.
I never got that. I always knew it was called the cellar tapes and I never saw the pun in that.
Well, it's a bit of it. Yeah.
Until you just said it then. I knew it was called the cellar tapes. Just thought, probably taped it in a cellar.
Yeah. But actually it's a bit of a crap pun, isn't it? Because what's the point of sellotape?
I think if anyone had realised that, you wouldn't have won the Perrier Award. It's just luckily it was such a crap pun. It was like,
well, it was the first one, you know, so there was nothing to measure it against, I suppose. But no, they were brilliant. But what I love was that, you know, that if you, like Miriam Margolyes, actually, and all these women who were in Footlights, like, years and years and years before, and they all tell these stories of how they weren't allowed to be members of Footlights, and they could only be in the review, and they couldn't be in. And we were allowed to be members, and then, you know, it was the 80s, so I was the first female president, because people sort of thought it was about time, kind of thing. But actually, once I was president, I kind of thought, why the fuck hasn't a woman done this before? Because actually, it's just a load of sort of drudgery and kind of finding, ringing up and finding the theatres to do the tour and all that. And it was quite surprising there hadn't been a woman before. But I was quite scared that, you know, I would fuck it up and so they'd never ask a woman again. Because subsequent to that and directing the review, I went to be a radio comedy producer at the BBC. And I was the first woman to do that as well. So it was bloody exhausting, actually, because, you know, it was sort of like, I just didn't sort of... I just felt all this pressure of being the first woman to do everything and, worried I'd screw it up for everybody else.
But you didn't screw it up. You won the Perrier Award.
So I won the Perrier
on your
Award.
Own.
Yeah, yeah.
It was just you.
Yeah, yeah. It was just me.
I remember seeing that show because it was on... They televised it.
Yes.
So that was very exciting. That was just when I was really getting into comedy. The only joke I remember was when I think it was Stephen Fry and Hugh Laurie talking and saying, oh, it's so embarrassing having gone to Cambridge and, you know, you have to... comes up in conversation and, you know, you feel, how am I going to mention it? And then in the end, I just lie. I say, you know, I'm going to Oxford. That's the only thing I remember. That's all I remember, but it was good.
Yes, I think, didn't they have that joke, you know, that where Stephen did that Dracula monologue, reading the sort of Dracula story, that he was either mad or both.
They did quite well, didn't they? Some of those.
They've done all right. And Emma, actually. I mean, I felt very gratified for Emma because the thing we were, you know, the women were sort of in the Footlights reviews at that stage. But we, Emma Thompson and Sandy Toksvig and I, did the first all-female review in Cambridge, which was called Woman's Hour. And you know, we wrote it, and the women sort of were in the Footlights, but even if you could write, you felt very intimidated to write because the men sort of, you know, were holding the reins, as it were. And I just felt so gratified when Emma got that Oscar for screenwriting,
yes,
you know, for Sense and Sensibility. And I sort of thought, wow, you know, good on her. All those sort of, all those years ago, you know, we were sort of struggling away, trying to sort of be recognised as writers. And then she got an Oscar for it. So yes. Good on her.
It's crazy, really. I mean, it was very much like there was a girl one in every review. Yeah. And they did the felines, really. And you
yes.
know, and it and did it, start to change know. In the 80s. So I guess that did come from you, you know, that we had, I think in our Oxford review, we had two women performers in us, so there you go, look at that.
I know, but it is extraordinary how, actually I was reading somebody's you know, stories of being at Cambridge, and they were saying, well, I knew that I couldn't be in it if so-and-so was in it, because there was only one girl.
Yeah, I was just reading that this week, and it said in the director's girlfriend, you knew it would be the yes. director's girlfriend, yes. yes. so they weren't going to get in it. It was Sarah Soleimani, I think.
Sarah Soleimani, yes, that's right. So that was more recently.
Yeah, that was in the 90s, yeah.
So you see.
Nothing's changed, has it?
We're not there yet, girls.
No.
As Andrea Leadsom will tell you.
So anyway, let's. I'm going to talk about going to Oxford in every podcast this season, because someone on YouTube said that I always talk about it, and I never have. So I've decided to do it every show for that person. And that's the way it's going to work, YouTube commentators. If you criticise me, I will just do it more. I have noticed Richard Herring doesn't have his cock out during any of the show.
I've just moved my chair around a bit. Is that all right? Yeah. I just realised that I very rudely had my back to these people over here. Sorry about that.
Fuck them. Fuck them.
It's very.
Should have bought your tickets a bit earlier,
theater,
shouldn't you?
It?
And then you'd be there with these guys. Look,
are they numbered seats? These.
When did you buy your tickets, Dave?
March.
There you go.
March.
Yeah,
wow, you're very well prepared, aren't you?
So, you grew up in Hoylake.
I grew up in Hoylake. Yes, in the northwest on the Wirral.
Did you ever go sand yachting?
No, I never went sand yachting. But I spent my youth in Hoylake baths. And, which have now sadly gone.
It's the premier site for sand yachting in Europe.
Well, and there's the Marine Lake at West Kirby, Richard, which yeah. is, where you yacht, you sea yacht, you
not
water yacht.
I'm interested in sand yachting.
Sand yachting.
On Wikipedia, that is the main thing about
Hoylake.
Sand yachting, they're
well,
proud of that.
It's very windy.
Who is your favourite, apart from yourself, who is your favourite celebrity who's come from Hoylake?
Glenda Jackson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good.
Glenda
almost.
Jackson. Well, Glenda Jackson. I wanted to be Glenda Jackson when I was a kid. I saw her once in Billy's Cafe on Market Street,
right.
and I was in Billy's, and I heard this voice going, "Can I have a 20 Embassy and a packet of Wrigley's Double Mint Gum, please?" And I sort of almost expected to say, "And make it quick, for I have the heart and stomach of a king and a king of England too." You know, she was doing all that Elizabeth R business at the time. But yeah, I wanted to be a proper, you know, Shakespearean actress like Glenda.
A lot of good people have come from Hoylake. Usually it's some rubbish
Cynthia
people.
Cynthia Lennon.
So that's Cynthia Lennon's on my list. Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig, ladies and gentlemen, yeah. Yeah.
What is the oldest listed building in or around Hoylake? I'm going out, you know, we can stretch out to West Kirkby.
Is it a lighthouse?
No.
There
aren't very many old buildings in Hoylake itself. I think, like, there might be 19th century, the oldest listed building in Hoylake. That's why I've gone a bit further afield.
Is it Coldy?
No, St. Bridget's Church, West Kirkby.
Oh, St. Bridget's.
Yeah.
Okay. I think I was christened at St. Bridget's.
Just checking. You were?
Yeah.
You should have known that, shouldn't you?
I know. Sorry about that.
It's an exciting place. I was up in Liverpool myself. That's when I met Duncan from Blue. When I say met him, he was on the...
Duncan
I was in the train.
From Blue. I've been snogged by Duncan from Blue.
Have you?
Yeah. And I was dressed at the time as Sharon Osbourne.
I hope it wasn't.
It was something. It was something he particularly requested. No, I was doing a Children in Need sketch where John Coleshaw and I were dressed as Sharon and Ozzy,
right.
And Sharon and Ozzy were in the sketch as well.
Okay.
I can't remember what the hell was going on now, but I do remember that the punchline was Duncan from Blue coming on and giving me a big kiss.
Yeah, pretty good. He's quite still nice. Good. He's a very good-looking boy. Still,
yeah,
I would say.
Yeah, he's a good-looking boy.
I only saw him through the train window. I looked to see. I tweeted about it, and I looked at his Twitter feed to see if he said I just saw Richard Herring on a train, and he didn't. In fact, what he was tweeting about was someone had said to him, "Oh, thanks for giving up your seat on the train," and he said, "I did that because one of your friends was fit." And then the bloke went back, said, tell me which one it was and I can make it happen for you. And Duncan said, ha ha. That's what happened to Duncan on Saturday morning. Impressionists are quite weird, I think, on the whole.
They're very weird.
Particularly
male impressionists.
Yeah, well, the male, you are quite normal. That's why
I am.
You're a normal person.
Yeah, male impressionists go into their impressions the whole time, whereas I really hate that sort of aspect of impressionism.
Yeah.
I really hate the, you know, going into your act.
Yeah.
I mean, I would far rather do this gig now, this chat now, without going into any impressions at all, just chatting to you, because I welcome the chance to just, you know, talk and be me. Whereas male impressionists, they always want it. It's always like, and if there's two of them or more than two of them, they start having an impression off. Yeah. The whole time, you know, they sort of say, oh, yeah, well, he does that, yeah, and he does that, and then he gets that, and they start kind of competing with each other, and there's this sort of escalating impressions going on.
And most of them don't really have any personality of their own. So that's the most of them. I think ventriloquists and impressionists are the strangest people in show business. If I had to just lock up some entertainers based on what they do rather than what they've done.
Yeah,
I'd just go for anyone with a ventriloquist doll or who just does impressions all the time.
Well, that's very insulting to me, Richard.
Well, you know, that's occasionally a few innocent people are going to get caught up in this in this web, but I think enough guilty
but
ones.
I never feel like an impressionist because I always feel like impressions are like another acting job.
Yeah,
and that's why I don't like doing them sort of, you know, like a performing dog. Yeah. I'd rather sort of work on it and work on the character and kind of try and sort of channel the character and sort of feel what it's like to be that person. Whereas it can become like a trick.
Yeah.
But I do think that the best impressionists, you know, are really good because they're really funny and that they're really accurate. And they're not only accurate, they're finding like an angle. The best impressions have an angle on whoever it is being done an impression of, whatever, and so it would be very boring if you were just to replicate somebody.
Yeah.
You've got to find like the comic spirit, to be quite wanky about it, of the character and show that and make it funny and make it live, and have an angle.
Yeah, magicians as well.
He's not listening to a word I'm saying, is he?
How do you think Diane Abbott would think about male impressions?
Ladies and gentlemen. Richard. I've just woken up from a really nice nap, Richard. See, they're dying for me to do an impression.
Did you get into trouble? Because when you did do a very funny bit on Diane Abbott at that time when everyone was piling into Diane Abbott over her, not knowing her numbers.
Yes.
Did you get...
It will cost. Yeah.
Yeah. Did you
it
get,
will cost.
Did you get any flack for that? Because there was a sort of... There was people felt like it... she was being unfairly picked on for...
Well, I think she is unfairly picked on, you know. I mean, there's no doubt that she, you know, she gets the most disgusting abuse online. I mean, I think partly because she's black, partly because she's a woman, and probably because she's both. And but she doesn't have the best grasp of detail. And also, I think she's quite... I hear from people that she can be quite lazy, that she doesn't, you know, pay attention to the detail of all these figures that she's supposed to be on top of. And she loves being on the telly. So if somebody asks her to go on the telly and talk about something, she'll go and do that. And so then she's got to expect, I think it wasn't her, but a lot of Corbynista sort of people got at me for doing a racist impression. And... I mean, I didn't make up and, you know, with black makeup or anything like that. It was just me doing it. And I would never take the piss out of anybody because of, you know, the colour of her skin. But I mean, I do this line actually as Diane Abbott, which I will now perform like a little dog for you, which is, you know, I refuse, you know, to tolerate racial discrimination because I refuse to be judged by the colour of my skin, but only by the stupidity of the things that I say. And that's kind of what I think. You know, if you say stupid things, then you've got to be, you know, somebody's going to laugh at you and take the piss out of you, you know, whatever the colour of your skin is. And it's like, you know, people who say to me, oh, you know, you're always taking the piss out of women. Yeah, that will be because I'm a female impressionist, you know. And if women haven't got the confidence, you know, to have the piss taken out of them in the same way that a man would, well, you know, where are we?
Yeah, well, that's the difficulty with it, because the minute you're saying someone's off limits, then that's immediately treating them as a different than anyone else as well.
So
as a comedian, as an impressionist, then you sort of have to be... Mm. I mean, I think you're very thoughtful in what you do. It's an amazing time to be a female impressionist, which hasn't, I suppose, apart from Margaret Thatcher being the Prime Minister, everyone, you know.
But also when Margaret Thatcher was the Prime Minister and, you know, we were doing Spitting Image, bloody Steve Nairn was doing Margaret Thatcher, you know, as a bloke doing Margaret Thatcher, which was brilliant, you know, and he was so brilliant at it. But, you know, it was a bit kind of fucking hell, you know.
So, yeah, but it's
But
know,
now we've got Teresa with her diplophonic voice, yes. Two-tone Tessie. Like she's doing her own descant the whole time. I mean, I've never, ever seen anybody so tense. She's just like she's even sort of, like, the mouth is so tense. The mouth is like, you know, she wants to smile, but the rest of her face won't let her. And it's just sort of, it's just all about the tension. I feel so sorry for her. I just feel like, oh my God, what must it be like to wake up in the morning and be Theresa May? I mean, fucking hell, and now she's got this whole, you know, she just doesn't deal with stuff well.
No.
She's got the whole, you know, the sexual abuse thing, you know, kicking off in Parliament now. She should be right on there, you know, as a woman sort of saying, you know, we're not going to tolerate this. We're, you know, making a statement. And she's just sitting there, you know, nodding at the back at Andrea Leadsom. And, you know, hasn't got an idea of how... I mean, the only time I saw her react kind of properly and without tension and with that was when she was actually making a very moving speech about the victims of that concert in Manchester, the Ariana Grande thing, where she made a speech and she wasn't sort of, you know, she wasn't just sort of mad with tension. She just made a genuine, what seemingly heartfelt speech. And, you know, it's a shame she can't sort of channel that a bit more.
Well, even after Grenfell, though, she was back to being, you know, with Grenfell. I mean, I think she nearly, I mean, not only destroyed the government, but, all, you know, the people were so angry about this, and she dealt with it so badly.
She did.
And,
I mean, she did. She hasn't got the common touch, has she?
But, like, it's, you know, touch. But it's as a comedy character, it's fun, isn't it?
Because it is fun.
It's this woman who's flipped and flopped and has got to power, and you think, oh, you know, she's got... Everyone thought, oh, when she came, she might be all right. She looks like she might have an idea compared to all these Bullingdon Club boys. And then just the descent and then the humiliation upon humiliation.
But of course, when she was Home Secretary, she never said a word, did she? No. I mean, she never said a word when she was... She used to send out James Brokenshire to do the immigration figures every now and again. And which were inevitably always terrible. And so she'd send him out. She never said a word. And nobody really knew what she was about. And I kept saying, you know, on Dead Ringers, we've got to do Theresa May. She's the bloody Home Secretary. Yeah, but what she said? Nothing.
Yeah.
And then when she came out on the steps and, you know, did that sort of St. Francis of Assisi type speech with, you know, do you know that if you're born poor, you will die up to 4 years earlier than other people? If you're black, you'll be more poorly treated by the criminal justice system than if you're white. If you're a woman, you'll be paid less than a man. But I'm not going to go on to list all the achievements of the previous Tory government. But anyway, when she made that speech, you know, you suddenly kind of got her, you know. She sort of revealed herself. But what she revealed was that she was, you know, she didn't really have an idea. She didn't have a conviction. She's not a conviction politician. She's a pragmatist.
Yeah.
And as such, I think she can be too easily swayed by advisors and, you know, those two that she had early on that, you know, just told her what to do, basically, and told everybody else what to do. And in the end, she had to get rid of them. But, Yeah, she is a walking bundle because she does. She's got. Can I do a little walk?
Yes.
She's got the tense mouth, so the mouth's really tense, and the face and everything. But she's got this really weird walk. I don't know if you know. She walks like she's carrying a drip trolley. She's sort of like this. Like carrying her drip trolley. I wonder if that's why she goes on those holidays where she's got two sticks.
And so when someone like Theresa May comes along, are you kind of hoping she'll stay in power forever so that you can keep doing impressions?
I'm hoping she's going to stay in power for as long as my tour goes on, to be honest. Yeah, I mean, next year, you know, I can write another show. But yes, I'm hoping that she'll sort of see this autumn out, really. Yeah.
I mean, politics has been changing very quickly even by the time this comes out, things may...
I know, well, you never know with Theresa May, you know, this is your Prime Minister speaking, you know. For now, you know, if it's the early evening bulletin, you know, who knows what'll happen by the 10 o'clock news. Yeah, you never know with her, because, yeah, anything could happen.
Yeah.
And, you know, but you do wonder, if she does go, well, who's going to replace her? You know, what are the alternatives? You know, there's Amber Rudd. Who looks a bit cross and a bit angry in her Velma from Scooby-Doo glasses. You know, there's Priti Patel. Do you know Priti Patel?
Yeah.
Priti Patel is like really, you know, she's like really lazy. She's got that really lazy sort of voice, but she's still like, yeah, I'm a woman of the people. And she sort of misses the gah off, or when she's speaking or appearing on the media, she misses the gah off all the words ending in in. And she agrees with herself all the time. She's like, you know, I've always thought the environment was really important. I really have. I think traffic congestion is a big problem. I really do. I think the only solution is to bring back hanging. I really do. Yeah. That Andrea Leadsom?
Yeah.
No. I'm not saying that I would make a better prime minister than Theresa May because I'm a mother. But I am saying she's barren and her womb is cursed.
They all do seem to... I mean, you know, and the men as well, they all seem to screw up almost like they're trying to not get... It's a very poison chalice becoming... Oh. I mean, I think the only positive thing that could come out of Brexit is that it destroys the Tory party.
I'd rather Brexit got destroyed and the Conservative Party survived, I think.
Be great,
oh, Brexit's the most terrible tragedy ever, isn't it? Isn't it? Yeah.
Well, yeah, it's not good, but...
I do this line in my show, actually, where you know, when you're touring around, you never quite know how all these things are going to go down. And, you know, I sort of start talking about Brexit and I say, you know, I'm quite sort of traumatised by Brexit. You know, I mean, I think Brexit, you know, divided families, you know, and offices, you know, with red lines down the middle, separating the Remainers from the other bastards. And then sometimes, you know, people sort of go... Well, I don't know about that, you know. Oh dear, you know. But most of the time, actually, and also because my audience is entirely made up of Radio 4 listeners, most of the time people like all the anti-Brexit stuff.
I noticed. I don't know if you read your reviews. You got a very nice review in the Telegraph.
But oh, yes, but he said, took off a star.
He said, I would have given you 5 stars, but you had some stuff about Brexit.
I know. And it was like, I mean, it was like the most kind of brilliant sort of reason not to get 5 stars. You know, so I would have given it 5 stars, but it was an unnecessary anti-Brexit rant. And I think that's actually really bad reviewing, because actually you're just sort of... You know, judging a show by the politics of the paper you're writing for, as opposed to the sort of the quality of the show. Anyway,
once Brexit happens, anyone who was a Remainer will have a star taken off them.
Yes,
or maybe one put on. Who knows? So, you never know. You have produced a comedian out of your genitals.
I have.
That's quite a trick.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, little Alfie Brown.
Yes.
Little Alfie Brown. Yeah, he's a father of children himself now.
Yeah, amazing.
Yeah, me and his dad, Steve Brown, who is also in comedy. He writes brilliant comedy songs. And he's written 2 brilliant comedy songs in my current show, one of which is a tribute and sort of parody of Victoria Wood, but it's mainly a tribute to her.
Oh, yeah, I heard about that.
And... and the other is a song called Difficult Woman, which is the title of the show. And so Steve's very, you know Steve, don't you?
I do know Steve.
He's quite sort of fiery Steve, and very sort of sure of himself or sure of his opinions. And Alfie has sort of inherited that. I'm much more kind of, well, I don't really know her, you know, and like me. But Alfie's much more, you know, confrontational.
He is quite a shocking comedian.
He likes to shock. He doesn't like to be conventional, but he's really interesting. He's got very, he can take his arguments through.
Yeah.
You know, he likes taking people on, which I don't. I just like people to come along and watch and laugh nicely.
Because my wife's also in comedy, and you know, we've had two children, so I'm hoping I'm sort of trying to breed a super comedian
child that will
go and win the Perrier Award, and then when he gets it, go, "That's for my dad. He was the best, you fuckers." That's what I'm hoping for.
So no neuroses for him.
So I'm hoping, but my son seems very serious. But I think my daughter's got a shot. Yeah.
Well, hope that'll be
so
interesting.
I hope so, because I'll probably, by the time my son's 18, I'll probably
what's her
be
name so we can watch out for
it? Phoebe Herring. She drew this. She was we were waiting in the train station for a while, delayed train, and I let her draw that picture and in the back of, I mean, look, it's just shit, isn't it? I don't know what's wrong with it. But I've put her name and the date on there just in case she becomes a famous artist. Then I can sell that.
Okay.
That's why you have
to. So now he's told us a little thing that she's a lovely, charming thing that she's said. He's shown us her drawings. It's so sweet, isn't it? Who'd have thought it? Richard and I were in a rowing race together once.
We were, yes.
We did a rowing race for. It was a television program called The Other Boat Race, and it was people from Oxford and Cambridge who'd never rowed before.
It's another chance to mention I went to Oxford.
But we were in the boats. We were both in an eight, but it was people who'd never rowed before, along with people who had actually been rowing blues. You know, were actually the Olympic style rowers. And I don't quite know how we kept up, or did they just, you know, come down to our level?
I don't know.
I mean, literally, and they were mixed boats. So I was in a boat, you know, with like these, you know, these 6'5" kind of 98 stone rowers.
Yeah.
I mean, it was very bizarre.
It was
wasn't
strange.
It?
Luckily, no one watched it, so we were okay.
No,
literally everyone in all their celebrities in the Oxford boat were. I think I was the tallest, apart from Jonathan Aitken, who was the cox.
Yes,
because they wanted Jonathan Aitken was the only famous, properly famous person they could get, and he was too unfit to row because he was like 60 or something, 65 at the time, but they wanted to be in the show, so he became the cox. Well, you had Connie Huck as a cox.
Oh God, we had Connie Huck. Honestly. Connie Huck, she was one of those people that's going, oh God, I'm just completely hopeless at everything. So, oh God, I'm just hopeless. And sort of, you know, these women that kind of are hopeless and want it to be endearing. I find that so infuriating. And anyway, she, I don't know how I'm going to cox the boat. And we were sort of thinking, really? And anyway, she had about 2 days training or something. And indeed, during the race, which took place on the coldest day.
Yeah.
And the coldest, windiest day on the Thames. And Connie, I just don't know what I'm going to do. And sort of drove us into each other, didn't she?
We crashed.
So Steve Redgrave, who was refereeing the race, stopped the race. And we were already completely soaked because all the waves had come into the boat, whereas the Oxford boat had cunningly taped up their boat with all this kind of, you know, do not pass this line incident tape or something. And so they had no water in their boat. So our boat was full of water and I was absolutely soaked through with all this water and quite literally got hypothermia by the end of the... Because we had to stop the race for 10 minutes. So you're in this lycra, kind of freezing cold, the wind whipping through you. And I had to be taken off, you know, in one of those silver foil blankets at the end.
Yeah. I can't remember who won, but it's...
Yes, you can.
I think that's a thing I won on the TV.
Yeah.
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 Gone about that. I've got a trophy.
I've won lots of things on
got a trophy. What I liked about that, they had prizes. They had like tankards, I think, and medals. And I said winners, and you said losers. It's your loser medal. Take that away.
Loser.
Could have said second, couldn't it?
I know.
There's been silver.
Yeah.
Oh, what a lot of fun that
was.
Oh,
laugh.
Oh, dear. Good. Very good. You were in the Jasper. One of your first jobs was in the Jasper Carrots show. Is that right?
It's not right, actually.
Is it not? It's on your Wikipedia.
No, that's because the first job I had, I no longer.
Oh, really? It wasn't when you were on it, but it wasn't on your.
No, I Jasper Carrot that was. Carrot's Lib, and we used to record it live at the Shepherd's Bush Empire on a Saturday night. It was very exciting.
Yeah.
Very exciting. And, that's when I first did impressions on the telly. I did Claire Rayner. Remember Claire Rayner?
Yeah.
Agony Aunt. Very breathless, very sort of, you know, will you do that for me, lovey? Will you ring me up and tell me when you do it? Will you do that, lovey? And I met her once, and I didn't quite realise that the reason that she talked like that was that she actually had emphysema. But I met her, and she loved the impression, took it in very good heart. Crap lungs, but very good heart. And I did Hilda Ogden off of Coronation Street.
Yeah.
La-di-da-di-da, R.A. Stanchuk. And who else? I think I did Esther Ranson or somebody. But yeah, I did, and so that was how I got to do Spitting Image, and the whole impressions thing sort of started.
All right.
But actually before that, I did this telly programme that I never talk about.
Okay, I'd like to hear about that.
Which was called Just Amazing. And Just Amazing was on ITV on a Saturday night,
right.
And it was all Guinness World Records kind of thing. So you'd have like the guy that had swallowed more goldfish than anybody else, and the guy that had leaped over more buses, and you know, I mean, but quite a lot of the like the goldfish type thing, like you know, the guy that had eaten the hugest plate of spaghetti, quite a lot of sort of gross stuff that involved ingesting horrible amounts of things. And I presented this show with Barry Sheen.
Wow.
And Kenny Lynch. It was a very high class production. And the guy that was producing it had heard me on Just a Minute.
Right.
Which I'd been on a Just a Minute on Radio 4, and he said, "Oh, she's a bright spark. Let's get her on." And we weren't allowed to use auto cue. And Barry Sheen was not the brightest, lamp in the bowl and whatever. And he would, we weren't allowed auto cue, so we have to sort of say, so you might not know that the guy that went over these buses, and he would sort of be going, what you might have not have what have thought you what you might thought that this, oh God, can I go again? I mean, he was absolutely, and Kenny Lynch was busy talking about how many girls he'd shagged all the time. I mean, he was really not a pleasant man,
right?
From that point of view. And there was me, who just had to say, just amazing, you know. And I wore a lot of velour tracksuits, wow. I remember. I mean, it was the most terrible programme. And I think it actually took me quite a few years to live it down.
Is there any of that on YouTube? That wouldn't have even survived to that.
I wouldn't have thought so.
Have you got a video of it anywhere?
No. No.
Got to find that.
No.
Lost episode of Doctor Who will be discovered.
I've got some cuttings, because I remember there was one guy that was doing the record for having more rats, being in a cube with more rats than anybody else or something.
It was three rats.
And so, and I went... I had an interview with the Daily Star or something, you know, and I can still see this headline in my mum's scrapbook where there was an interview in the Daily Star, and it said, "Oh rats, it's so difficult not to swear on telly," says Zany Jan. Because I've gone, fuck, and I saw all these rats, you know. Oh Jesus, it was just terrible, absolutely appalling.
Good. Just amazing. We'll put that on, so, I'm going to put that on your Wikipedia page. So,
no,
your Wikipedia page is now correct. You're the first woman to do a lot of things.
Yeah.
You're the first woman to win Celebrity Mastermind.
Yay!
Not the last, though. Not the last.
No.
Because I was beaten by a woman on my Celebrity
and
Mastermind.
And who was your...
I don't remember her name.
Oh, go on.
I don't remember much about it. Hilary Kay. I don't remember much about her.
Hilary who?
Hilary Kay from the Antiques Roadshow.
Oh, right.
She did antiques as a specialist subject.
Yeah. What did you do?
Rasputin.
Okay.
So I think I should win for that. That should be why.
Well, you know, there's quite a skill involved, I think, to choosing your subject.
Yeah.
Because I chose the life and work of Daphne du Maurier. And I was very interested in Daphne du Maurier, and I have a little cottage in Cornwall, and you know, and I thought it'd be really nice to sort of, it would be a nice sort of thing to revise, you know,
yeah.
And so So I, that was all fine. But like on my thing, there was Aid Edmondson and Bill Turnbull and Benjamin Zephaniah.
Wow. Okay.
And Benjamin Zephaniah, bless him, his specialist subject was reggae. I mean, too broad,
yeah.
You know, just too broad. So, of course, there were all these questions that he, you know, whereas I think Aid was doing the Sex Pistols from 19-something, you know, and Bill Turnbull was doing beekeeping. Oh, Mr. Personality. And he was furious that I'd won because he thought, you know, as a sort of news journalist, his general knowledge should be better than mine.
Yeah.
And it was not.
How many points did you score?
31.
I got 34.
Did you? Yeah. That is
so
very impressive.
So I'm the best.
Well, I did hear at one point they wanted to do a sort of, you know, super champions, yeah, or something, you know, and I was going, oh, yeah, I'm well up for that, but it never happened.
I wouldn't. I don't know if I would do it again, even if I was eligible.
Really?
But I'm not a super champion because I didn't win. I find it very, very strange. I had anxiety dreams about it for quite a while, and it took
me
about a year to get over it. And, you know, I hardly ever talk about it now. it hardly ever comes up.
No, I
had a dream where I was going to the mastermind chair and had to wade through a big field of mud to get to it. I think that was probably mean something.
Yeah. No, once you've done Strictly Come Dancing, nothing else is ever
scary.
Yes,
I was going to ask you about Strictly. Well, I'm not. My parents love that show. I'm not. I've been watching Susan Kalman on it, but just her bits.
Yeah.
I'm not that interested in Strictly Come Dancing. But how was it being on there? You're with Anton Dubek.
Anton Dubek. Yeah. It's absolutely fucking terrifying. I mean, I've never, ever, ever been so scared about it, because I think if you find it easy to remember dances, it's actually not so bad. But I was just always terrified. I mean, however good or bad I was, and you know, I wasn't very good, but I was sort of all right.
You did well though, didn't you?
I think I did about 5 or 6 weeks. But anyway, I was just absolutely petrified that I would just forget the dance. And so, I mean, literally, I was on Valium and beta blockers. Literally, I couldn't sleep. I was getting, you know, palpitations the whole time. I mean, I was so. I mean, the rehearsals were brilliant. Because the rehearsals are such fun, because you just laugh and laugh, and it's so lovely being taught to dance by, you know, because they're such, you know, they're sort of athletes and artists, these people. I mean, they're extraordinarily competitive, but they're artists, you know, they make beautiful shapes and lines, and it's just so amazing, you know, working with them like that. But come Saturday night, oh, Jesus.
But then it's just such a... You know, if you're not a ballroom dancer, it's quite a big ask, isn't it?
They seem to sort of say, "I'm sorry, but you know, you're sickling your heel or something." You know, and you think, "I'm just trying to fucking remember, you know, what comes next." And am I sickling my heel? You know, it's like that. And they sort of say, "You know, why wasn't your hand extended?" Well, you know, obviously I forgot. It wasn't deliberate. They kind of, you know, they're.
I'm not a professional.
Yeah,
stop judging me.
I know.
What is this?
Yeah. Yeah, what are you, judges or something? Yeah, but no, Susan Kalman's doing great, and I think it's really lovely because she seems to be really able to enjoy it.
Yeah.
And I don't know quite, and I think it does depend on your partner. I think he's clearly he's very good at sort of adapting it for her and not expecting sort of too much of her.
Yeah.
Whereas Anton, it was all a bit sort of, ha ha ha, it's all about me, you know. You know, and maybe he's got better, because I did it 10 years ago, but...
Yeah, I don't think I'd like to do that program. My mum and dad would like it if I did it.
Yeah.
But
that would be a bit of a laugh.
Do you still get the paid the same if you go out the first week?
You did then.
Yeah.
I'll do it then. You did then. I don't think you do anymore. I think you get paid more the longer you stay in.
Wow.
Yeah. Because we had Tarby on our series.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, he made sure he went out first week, I think. I think he actually gave up. He actually said, I can't, you know, my heart won't take it kind of thing.
Right.
I think he did the waltz the first week, and then the second week he got to do the Cha-Cha-Cha, and it was like, I can't be doing this, you know.
did you understand what this programme was before you came?
Yeah.
I didn't realise there'd be so much dancing.
Yeah.
Didn't really understand.
No, it's... Yes, it is an amazing
experience.
There's
one of the dancers I quite fancy, and I'd like to go on just so I could fall victim to the curse of Strictly Come Dancing with her.
Yeah.
But I don't know what her name is, but she's nice. If you could guarantee you get that one. You know.
Yeah,
the one
you would
I'm
have
about.
To. Yeah, you'd have to kind of learn her name, I think, before you sort of started.
You think so?
Yeah. Yeah.
Do women like that? It's been a long time. I've been with my wife for 10 years now. It's been a long time since I've had to, you know.
Yeah. Well, I should stick with what you've got, Richard. Yeah. If I were you.
I think I can't remember her name now.
Yeah, well, you're suffering from sleep deprivation. It's not surprising.
We've got two kids. That's it, isn't it? That's we've done our duty. Can move on now, right? That's the rules, right, David? Yeah. He knows what me and him, we're like two peas. He's a nuclear physicist.
Sorry?
He's a nuclear physicist, that guy.
Are you?
Who shouted out about Nick Knowles.
Wow.
He's got other interests other than nuclear physics. But
DIY programmes on the telly, clearly.
Wearing a Rahulastapa t-shirt. Look how rubbish this audience is. I snuck that in. Nothing, not one. Not one back. Not one back. You can't do it now, mate. Can't do it now. It's terrible.
Okay, what other terrible thing are you going to rake up now?
I'm going to ask him. I'll ask you. We did some great emergency questions, but I was saying we did on the backstage interview, which you can get if you're a monthly badger or if you're a Kickstarter subscriber. You can watch me doing some emergency questions backstage. And what was extraordinary, I did say at the time, I did three questions in a row, and none of them had anything to do with sex or genitals. This one doesn't either. So we're on a roll.
Oh, great.
What is the most expensive thing you have ever lost?
I left my car.
Your car?
Yeah.
Did you find it again?
No. No, I was in my house one morning and I couldn't find my keys, and I said to my husband, "You haven't seen my keys, have you?" And I had Louis, my 19-year-old was then about, you know, 2 or 3, and I said, "Do you think Louis could have reached up and got them?" And because it was like the front door keys and the car keys all in one. And no, and we had the builder in, and the builder said, "Well, is the car still here?" And I went, well, I don't know. So I looked outside the window, and indeed the car wasn't there. And as it turned out, somebody had fished through the window, through the letterbox, and got the car keys off the, you know, the central heating radiator cover thing in the hall. And nicked the car, and it was just like, what, you know, and apparently it was a sort of thing that you know, you sort of started getting told not to put your keys on the table by the door. So it was off to, you know, Albania or wherever.
I don't know if that's losing it though. That is having something stolen. That is
okay. Well,
it's pretty impressive though.
Yeah,
I believe.
But I tell you what. Yep. On a lighter note. This car was a brand new car, and because it was nicked a day before this car was a year old, on the insurance I got a brand new car.
Wow.
And if it's a day after, if it's a year or a day after, you get the value, you know, of a...
Sounds a bit suspicious, doesn't it? Yes. That was an amazing coincidence. Got two cars now, haven't you, Jan? That's, just drove one round the corner. Oh, it just disappeared. Yeah, man, fished out the... He's a fishing rod or something. This is a good... another question, Ro, that has nothing to do with genitals. I'm going to keep going until one about genitals comes up.
Okay.
When you have fears that you may cease to be before your pen has gleaned your teeming brain, what do you do about that?
I take a Valium. Or a beta blocker.
Work for Keats, and that's a Keats quote. That's quite clever. That's quite a clever emergency question that I think went over the heads of this lot. They're just waiting for a
fears that I've ceased to, that I will cease to be.
Didn't he? Old Keats, he did cease to be before his pen had gleaned his teeming brain.
Yeah,
we've carried on, haven't we, Jan?
We carried on
after our pen hasn't struggling to glean. There's nothing left to glean. If you had to eat a person, if you had to. Who would you eat, and in what order would you devour their body sections? This is an emergency question app available on Android and Apple.
Who would I eat?
Yeah, and in what order would you eat them if you had to?
Oh, I can't even go there. I just don't think I could. But it would probably be a plump little toddler.
I can't go there, but I will say the worst thing that I could possibly.
I'd
eat your daughter. I think she'd be delicious.
Yes, a little doused herring.
All right, we got there eventually. This is to find out if you're like a normal person on the street or your celebrity ways have changed you. How much is a pint of bull's semen? If you were going to buy a pint, how much do you think that would cost?
£10.95.
It's a lot more than that.
Is it?
I don't know how much it is. What I say is, remember to Google what is the current market value of bull semen before you ask this question. It is designed to show whether the person you're asking is in touch with the normal man in the street and buys their own bull semen, or if they send someone out to buy their bull semen.
Yeah, I've got a man to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's expensive. I think I asked that question because a listener or viewer... that was his job, was to sell bull semen, and he wrote in and told me about it. I think that's why, often with emergency questions, it's just whatever's going on around me is why.
Yeah.
Which is why the next question is, does sex with a robot count as cheating on your partner? That's very much based on my real life.
Yes, yeah. Obviously. It doesn't, though, does it?
It doesn't count as cheating, though, no. Definitely. I'm glad you agree. I wish I'd married you, Jan. I really do. I wish I'd. My wife is very strict about things
is
like
she?
That. Yeah.
About robotic.
And they're coming. I thought it'd be ages before there were sex robots, and they're basically out now, aren't they? They're in the news all the time, being soiled by people in fairs. Talked about it in one of the previous podcasts.
Were they talking about robots, sex robots having Scottish accents or something?
Well, were they?
To make Scottish men feel more at home or something. Really? I don't know. Yes, I don't know.
Delay the orgasm a bit longer.
Yes, you'll have had your orgasm then. Yeah.
If it's my Scottish accent, I can't guess I'm coming. You can use that one if you want. You want any help with your Scottish accent?
No, okay.
I'm pretty good at the old impressions.
Yeah.
Betty.
Yeah, very good.
Frank Spencer's there.
Very good.
Thank you very much. You were a Sunday school teacher when you were in your youth. I have learned from my research of talking to you backstage. Yeah.
I was a Sunday school teacher, yes.
But you didn't know about King
Herod.
That's
my agent's favourite bit of trivia about me. I was a Sunday school teacher when I was about 14.
Right.
So I used to sort of teach, you know, the Bible stories to all these little kids who were probably about 8 or something. But then I started going to confirmation classes. Mm-hmm. And I got a bit pissed off with confirmation classes because I used to sort of ask the minister things like, so if my granddad's an atheist, but he's a really kind man... will he go to heaven or hell? And they go, oh, he'll go to hell. Really? Oh, yes. Well, you know, if he doesn't accept Jesus as his Lord, I'm afraid he'll go to hell. And I thought, oh, fuck this. And also, I'd sort of started a bit of snogging and everything by then, and it just didn't seem to sit well with doing, you know...
Not during the Sunday school lessons.
No.
That's just cut off.
No, you know, it just didn't seem to sit well.
Yeah, but I think, you know, being at 40, I was brought up in a religious family, but I kind of thought it was stupid pretty quickly.
Really?
Yeah. I just it didn't...
What sort of religion?
All those sort of things. They were C of E, and still are. My parents are still...
They still go to church.
They still go to church. I don't think they quite believe it.
You see, it's very strange because my kids' generation don't know Bible stories. Whereas we, you know, whether you or I now choose to believe or not, we know all those stories. You know, they're part of your, you know, they're part of our culture, all the sort of, you know, the Good Samaritan and you know, all you know, Daniel in the lion's den and then all those.
Jesus,
he was a good one.
Jesus and the stuff he did.
The loaves and the fishes and all that.
Yeah.
No, but they, and hymns, water. You know. There's a whole load of culture that our kids will never know. There was some sort of like quiz on the other day and they were using all these Bible stories. And I thought, we won't be able to do that.
No. It's good, isn't it?
Well, I suppose it is good. Although I think, you know, I just can't sort of believe. I find it fascinating that people can believe, you know, in God and Jesus and the whole sort of detail of all that, you know, the resurrection and what God wants and what Jesus wants and all that. And they're very intelligent people, and yet they believe all that. I mean, I'm sure you've all got your... But I find that quite fascinating because I just can't quite square the sort of the detail of that dogma with also being intelligent.
Yeah, but some people just like some, you know, security and just not have to just have an answer to something. And it's an answer, isn't it? It gives you an answer.
Well, it is an answer.
There is no answer to
it. And I remember Thora Heard always used to sort of say, oh, my mate, God. I love to talk to my mate, God, and I just have a chat to him. And he says, oh, don't worry, Thora, love. God bless. And I kind of think, well, who does she think she's talking to? You know, but that must be incredibly comforting to have somebody that you think, you know, I mean, whether it's a sort of an old man with a white beard or...
And Peter Sutcliffe said the same as well. Peter Sutcliffe, the Yorkshire Ripper.
I don't do an impression of
the
him,
The Yorkshire
though.
Ripper did the same. I'll do it. Oi, oi. God do it talking to me. Said, kill, hammer those. Get a hammer. Wear a jumper on your knees and hammer those women for me, mate. That's the Yorkshire. Peter Sutcliffe, the Yorkshire Ripper there.
Yeah, very good. So it's uncanny. It's almost like he was in the room.
Might try and do a rival. Frank Spencer. I've got Frank Spencer, the Yorkshire Ripper.
Yeah.
The Scotch person.
The Scotch person.
A Scotch accent. I can come in.
That's all right.
Aye.
The Scots. Maybe I should start doing some Scots
people. Okay.
Shall I do some Scots people having sex? And Kirsty Wark having sex.
Oh.
Welcome to Newsnight. I'm Kirsty Wark. More on that story later. Yeah. Don't think I want to do her having sex, though. She's too, you know, I respect her too much.
I think she came to see my Edinburgh show this year, but it was the one where I forgot all the bits in the show. So I think I might have been
So you didn't get on her Edinburgh Nights show?
I didn't
show
get on the Edinburgh. I saw her in the leaving, and then I didn't get on Edinburgh Nights. So that was... I forgot, like, the punchlines to about three things. And then at the end, I think I talked about this last week. At the end, I went, oh, yeah, I'm getting to the end and there's a callback and I haven't done the bit before.
Oh,
the
no!
So I had to then do the bit so I could... I should have just not bothered doing the...
Oh, God. Well, she came to see my show and she did a sketch in my show.
Wow.
Because I was going on Edinburgh Nights.
Yeah.
I did remember all my words. And she... Because I had a sketch where I did Kirsty Walk and Lise Doucette. So, you know, she had to say, welcome to Newsnight, you know, providing you with political opinion you can pass off as you're on Facebook. And we're joined now by our international news correspondent, Lise Doucette. And so I did Kirsty and Lise, but in this particular thing, I started doing it, and I said, but there's somebody here who can do Kirsty Walk much better than I can. Ladies and gentlemen, Kirsty Walk! And Kirsty came and played herself in this sketch. And it was... you know, it was great. You should have been there.
Did you say to you, you're not doing it properly? That's not how she talks.
Yeah, it was a really poor impression.
The other week I was talking about obscure jingles that you remember from adverts from a long time ago that no one else remembers.
Okay.
Have you got any? I've thought of another. There was another one that just popped into my mind.
Okay, I've got
I don't
one.
Think anyone will remember this.
Yeah.
With Magnadoodle, you can make those googly eyes. With Magnadoodle, the fun's a big surprise. You make a wrist and you can draw the comic strips. You can draw lines fit. You can do them
still. It's too long, Richard.
You can start all over again with Magnadoodle. You can have a lot of fun. Magnadoodle from Palatoy. Anyone remember that? Damn you!
Okay, here's
do
one.
Do you want to have the, no one's got to remember it.
Double your pleasure, double your fun with double good, double mint gum.
Too famous.
Double delicious, double smooth too. Double mint's double, delightful to chew. So double your pleasure. I won't do the That's whole good. Of mine because I know that I've lost them.
What all. About chica, chica, chica-boo? It's such
no,
fun to dress you up too. I just thought they'd come into my head and I remember them and I remember them all the way through and they're things that no one else remembers. If I could do ones that everyone remembered, I could have a successful comedy career, but I do ones that no one can remember.
Okay.
Magnadoodle, mate. Remember what, you know what I'm talking about, right, mate? Yeah? Cheekaboo.
What about,
David?
What about Cheekaboo. This is luxury you can afford by Cyril Lord?
Remember I don't that? Remember that. That's good.
Cyril Lord carpets. Maybe that was just in Liverpool.
That's cheating. That is cheating. It's got to be everywhere. Well, we've nearly finished this.
Have we nearly done enough?
It's all just measured out in time. That is comedy by the minute.
Mm.
No, it's been very interesting to talk to you and about tango. That was good. I like the tango bit.
That was.
I think. Have you ever done an impression of Rebecca Front? Because I think you look quite like Rebecca Front, but she's quite hard to do an impression of. But you look like her.
She is quite difficult. Yes, because she's. I've never done her. Well, you know, she's on enough, isn't she? Shame she can't get more work.
Do you think there'll ever be another other boat race? And if there was another other boat race, would you take part in it again?
No, I'm too old now. I'm too old now. I remember the bloody commentator saying, and Jan Raven's the oldest. Hang on. Yeah, I wasn't even 50 at the time.
I'm 50 now. I wasn't 50 at the time. Now I am 50.
Well, I'm nearly 60.
It's unbelievable.
I know.
It is unbelievable. You're the same age as Theresa May. Is that what you're saying in your show?
I say in my show I'm the same age as. I mean, I think actually she is 60 and I'm 60 in May, but I suppose we would have been in the same school year, for example. But yeah, I say I'm exactly the same age as Theresa May, and then I ask for some kind heckles, because I ask people to be kind and sort of say you don't look old enough. and I have various things to sort of that people have to. I sort of say, okay, well, we'll have a little go at you. You've got to say you don't look old enough when I say something, you know, that says that maybe I am a bit old. So I have things like, you know, I've just renewed my National Trust membership. And the person's kind of, you know, you don't look old enough. And then later on, I sort of say, I took the dog for rather too long a walk this morning. And as I was getting home, I put my key in the front door. I did a little wee. So you don't look old enough. Latchkey incompetence.
Well, you don't look old enough.
Well, thank you very much.
It's true.
And you've got very wonderful hair, Richard, if we're throwing the compliments around.
Thank you very much.
It's very glossy, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you use on it, darling?
I use different things.
Yeah?
Today...
Well, you're supposed not to not to use the same products, are
today,
you?
Today, bull semen. There's a pint of bull semen. That's what keeps it going.
It's working very well for you.
I use Tony and Guy... anti-dandruff shampoo, only because that's what I had. I don't have dandruff, but then there's, you know,
I'm thinking there's a conditioner on there.
I think it was 2-in-1. I think the conditioner was inside the Tony.
No, they can't possibly work, can they? Shampoo and conditioner.
Well,
there's no way that can work. Shampoo and conditioner.
Remember this, David? Remember that? It's been absolutely. Sorry, I'd like to apologise to everyone. I've been too aggressive. Fuck off. So, it's been lovely to talk to you. Thanks very much.
Thank
Ladies and gentlemen,
much.
Jan Raven!
You
have been listening to Richard Herring's That's the Square Theatre podcast with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Jan Raven. The music is, as ever, played by the popular beat combo Pest. Thank you to everyone at the British Comedy Guide and the Leicester Square Theatre at Go Faster Strike for their fantastic work on putting these shows together. Thank you very much. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. It is a fuzz, gofasterstripe.com and Sky Potato Production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can, and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.